I don't know if you've ever used the search engine DuckDuckGo. So it's a little bit different to Google. So Google has got these clever algorithms where it will tell you, like if you're interested in something and you search for something, it will tell you the things that you're interested in. DuckDuckGo is much more impartial in what it does. And so if you type in what happened on the first F, what happened on the first F, you get five main options that come up. The second one is the one I'm going to talk about. So you got what happened on the first Thanksgiving, what happened on the first day of creation. Interesting that people are interested in that. People are interested as well in what we're going to be talking about over Christmas, what happened on the first Good Friday, and what happened on the 4th of July. If you don't know what the 4th of July is, it's Independence Day. There you go. But what's interesting, above the first day of creation, Independence Day, and Good Friday, on DuckDuckGo, you get Fishing Trip Gavin. What happened on Fishing Trip Gavin? And so some of you are like, I don't know what that is all about. And some of you, if you've watched Gavin and Stacey, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. It's an awkward, there's a fishing trip in the show Gavin and Stacey, which has caused a riff and an awkwardness in a family. So one character called Uncle Blin and the other character called Jason. So they have a bit of an awkwardness between them. I hope you were impressed, Linda, particularly. I hope you were impressed by the Welsh there. And this was a very funny moment in the program. It's very relatable, and hopefully just me talking about it you'll find comical, even if you haven't seen Gavin and Stacey. So what happened on the fishing trip in Gavin and Stacey? Well, what we know is that there was a fishing trip. That's one thing we do know. The other thing we know is they were on their knees. We don't know if this sounds probably metaphorical. It was cold. So something else we know. It was legal in Wales. There you go. That's another bit of helpful information. These two are my personal favourites of the information that we know about the fishing trip. It involves soup, and it defies the laws of gravity. So there you go. That was what caused the awkward moment between two characters in a show, and the event. It caused friction to the point where that one would enter the room, the other would leave the room. And they would just go, all right, all right, all right. And so it was just this moment of awkwardness. The atmosphere in the room, whenever they entered together, it just changed. And it was unspoken, completely unspoken awkwardness. And what happened is it impacted the whole family. The whole family were impacted by this event. The story we're looking at today is Jacob and Esau, and it tells the story of more than an air of awkwardness, but a proper rift in a family. It was a feud that tore a whole family apart in a very, very real way. And so I'm going to unpack that a little bit this morning, but before I kick off properly, I'm aware that this is, in reality, painful for some. It's an experience that people might be going through right now, and it's a sensitive topic of broken family and restoration within that family. And this story we're going to look at today, it's got a link between reconciliation with one another, between Jacob and Esau, and also reconciliation with God. So we'll hopefully see that through it all. But the main point of this morning, the main point that I want to get across to you is this. Because of God's grace, there is nothing stopping us from being reconciled to Him. Because of God's grace, there is nothing stopping us from being reconciled to Him. So some of you are like, oh, what does that word reconciled mean? It's a bit of a Christian word that we use. And so I'll just explain it from the outset. So then when I say it each time, you're like, oh, that's what it means. Reconciled means being brought back into relationship. That's what it means. So you could say, because of God's grace, there is nothing stopping us from being brought back into relationship with Him. So we'll unpack that throughout the morning. We're gonna look at how the reconciliation happens between within families and also between God and us as well. So we're going to be starting in chapter 25. So if you've got a Bible, turn to Genesis 25. We're going to be kicking off from there, and we're going to go all the way to chapter 33. And you might be thinking, whoa, that's a lot. Don't panic. We're going to plot through the story of Jacob and Esau, and hopefully we'll pick out the bits for us to be able to see where we can see that because of God's grace, there is nothing stopping us from being reconciled to him, maybe except ourselves being the only issue in that. So we're going to read chapter 25, and we're going to be in verse 21. We're going to be starting there. Chapter 25, verse 21. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife, because she was childless. The Lord answered his prayer. Am I on the right one? Is the right one, yes. Isaac prayed on behalf of the Lord, on behalf of his wife, because she was childless. The Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled each other within her, and she said, "Why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb. The two peoples from within you will be separated. One will be stronger than the other, and the elder will serve the younger." When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man on the open country, while Jacob was content to stay at home among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once, when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, "Quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished." That's why he was also called Edom. Jacob replied, "First, sell me your birthright." "Look, I'm about to die," Esau said. "What good is a birthright to me?" But Jacob said, "Swear to me first." So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. So I want us to firstly work through the idea, because of God's grace, there is nothing stopping us from being reconciled to him, by looking at these two brothers. Jacob was named Jacob because of what he did in the womb. He grasped the heel of his brother. He was trying to pull him back, and the Hebrew here is a play on words. It's "for he deceives," and he grows up to become that. He grows up to become his namesake. So Jacob grows up to be a taker, a grabber, someone who wants stuff for himself, a deceiver. He is only looking out for number one. That's what he has done. He is living out his namesake. And so far we've learned from this family, from the origin family that we have seen over time, that these people are not perfect. God's people, the plan of these people, they are not perfect. And so what we can then do is we can think, well, they might not be perfect. I'm a bit better than them. But the truth is, we are all like Jacob. This morning, where you are sitting, you are like Jacob. We are all like Jacob. We are all takers by nature. That's our innate position. That's what we are born into. We'll come to how we're all takers a little bit more detail in a minute. But let's explore these two brothers a little bit further. They are very, very different. they are like chalk and cheese. You've got Esau, he's like the strapping, sporty, jock type of guy. He's the one who would be on the football team. And then you've got the preppy, academic, likes just being inside and cooking. That's Jacob. And so they're very, very, very different. So firstly, Esau, he is the firstborn. He's going to be getting the inheritance from his dad when he dies. He's going to be getting that first. But what does Jacob do? Jacob wants it. And so in chapter 25, what he does, he takes his moment when his brother is off guard. So his brother's just come back from the field. He is famished. And what he does is really reckless. Esau is reckless. That's what he is. He comes in from a bit of hunting and he's a little bit tired and he makes out, oh, my life's going to end. Oh, it's so bad. It's so difficult. And he pays a ridiculous price for some red stew, for some lentil stew. That's what he's doing. He's come back tired. He's not about to die. And he's just being so melodramatic. And really, he was being godless in what he was doing by giving away the birthright he had to his brother. In Hebrews, it talks about it. In Hebrews 12, it says, see that no one is godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. He is reckless. He is short-sighted. And we can think, oh, that's silly of him, isn't it? What a silly fool. But actually, we are like this in our culture. Our culture is so full of this. We look at the short-term gain for a long-term cost. I don't know if you've heard of a company called Klarna. So Klarna, you can buy stuff. So if you go online, if you go on to Currys or if you go on to ASOS or whatever, there's an option to pay via Klarna. And so what you do is you buy whatever it is. It might be a washing machine or a Hoover or some clothes. And what you can do is you can pay for it in little installments over a long period of time. And so it sort of kind of makes a bit more sense when you've got a washing machine, yeah? But you can literally buy anything through Klarna. You can buy lip gloss. Like, that's worrying. You can buy lip gloss through Klarna. So I'm paying for lip gloss over a longer period of time because I can't afford to get it right in that moment. It's crazy what we can do. And so that's what we're like. We want instant. We are into instant and we do the reckless. And it's not always best. Psychologists talk about delayed gratification. So delayed gratification is avoiding the instant reward. You avoid that to then get the reward later on. And so that reward makes you internally feel better than those quick instant rewards. And we do this as parents. Like, I'm trying to teach my kids, you don't want that biscuit because we've got pudding later. We got ice cream. You don't want that, you want this. But you just got to wait that little bit longer. We know that this is the right way to be thinking, yet we don't do that in our culture. It takes a maturity. We need to mature into that understanding. So that's Esau. But Jacob, what about him? How does he fit into this? He's not quite so reckless, but he is utterly ruthless. He's not reckless, he is ruthless, he knows what he wants, he is what he is living for and who he is living for. He is looking out for number one. He ruthlessly lives up to his name. There's a similar story, we're not going to read today, but in chapter 27, where we can paint a picture of this utterly dysfunctional family, where Isaac, he wants to bless Esau, his favourite son, and then his wife, Rebecca, whose favorite son is Jacob, she's like, well, why don't you pretend to be Esau? Why don't you do that? It's like properly dysfunctional. And in this story, in chapter 27, Jacob, he just blatantly outright, he just lies. He just deceives his dad just to get this blessing. He shamelessly deceives it in order to get this legally binding blessing, which in the day, at the time, was a massive deal. And so that results in what we see in verse 41. Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. And Esau determined in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are approaching, then I will kill my brother Jacob. That's proper separation. That's that's a proper issue in your within the family. He's like, my brother, he's dead to me. That's his approach. And you know what? That's a bit like our world. Our world is like that. It is full of division and separation. Right now, there is an international global war happening. But it's also closer to home. When we are having discussions with people, disagreeing with somebody apparently means that you hate them. And to love somebody means to agree with everything that they say. That's often how our culture views any disagreement. You have to love somebody, you have to agree with them. And to disagree with someone is to hate them. And it's just impossible. It would be impossible to love anybody. God has got a better way. The good news is that we'll see it in a bit, is that the gospel, it breaks down those walls and it reconciles and it helps us to live alongside one another, even in differences. And so throughout this story, Jacob's reconciliation to Esau, this joining back together that we'll see a bit later on, we'll see is it's a picture of our reconciliation to God. It's us being joined back to him. And it's how we can be reconciled not only just vertically with us and God, but also horizontally with the people around us. So as we go through the story, we'll see that Jacob has both his reconciliation horizontally with his brother and also with God as well, and how those sort of work in unison together. Just as Jacob was separated from Esau because of his selfish, selfish acts, we have been separated from God because of our sin. We all need, every single person needs reconciliation because we are separated from God. Adam and Eve, they were banished from God after they were reckless, after they were ruthless. They were like, no, I want to be God. I'm taking the fruit. They were takers. They were grabbers just like we were. And the result is separation from God. Isaiah 59, but your iniquities have separated you from God. Your sins have hidden his face from you so that he will not hear. It is important that we don't think, oh, Jacob's awful. Jacob's not good. I'm not like that. Well, actually, in this story, we are Jacob. We are the ruthless. We are the selfish. We are the taker and the grabber. We are all self-centered takers by nature. And some of you might be struggling to hear that. Oh, I'm not like that. No, we are. We all are. And so we are separated from God. And therefore, we need to be joined back in relationship with him. All of us do. Because of God's grace, there is nothing stopping us from being reconciled to him. We need reconciling. And the good news is that there is nothing stopping that from happening. So we're going to see that with Jacob. We're going to jump down to chapter 28. We're going to be in verse 10. And what's happened is after in chapter 27, when he's like, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill my brother. His mum's like, leg it, run. And so he legs it and he flees and he travels 400 to 500 miles. If you Google it, it's 179 hours, just if you ever want to make the journey. And on his way, what happens is he encounters God. He meets with God, and it's a stunning moment. So up to this point, Jacob, he doesn't care about God. He doesn't have a relationship with God. He is probably aware that there is a God, but he's like, he's irrelevant. I don't need God. And so that might be you this morning. You might just think, oh, yeah, he's there, but oh, he's a bit irrelevant. Let's read what happens with Jacob. We're in 28, verse 10. We're going to go to 22. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. So that's the 179-hour journey that he made. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. That sounds comfy. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac, and I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. All the peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid, and he said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on it. He called that place Bethel, though the city used to be called Luz. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and I will watch and will watch over me on this journey I am taking, and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God, and this stone that I have set up will be a pillar, set up as a pillar, will be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. We see in this part of the story, God's grace comes to us while we're still takers. He encounters God. God is the one who breaks in. That's what happens to Jacob here. He's got nothing. He's not got a pillow. He has a stone for a pillow. Most uncomfortable sleep ever, I'm sure. His selfishness has taken him to a wilderness. And we see, like we saw with Rahab, when there's a wilderness, God comes and encounters, and it happens here as well. And what happens is God pours his unmerited grace on him. God lavishly blesses Jacob. It is undeserved. It's completely uninitiated by Jacob. Jacob doesn't install this. It is all God coming in and doing it. It is unexpected and it is incredible. Because of God's grace, there is nothing stopping us from being reconciled to him. We can have relationship with him. God is too just and he is also too holy not to deal with sin and with the selfishness of our sin. But Christ, God himself, comes and he deals with it. And we just need our role is to accept it. Revelation 3:20, here I am. I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person and they with me. Sin is no longer a problem. Nothing is a problem. The only thing is whether we open the door, whether we go through the door or not. Whatever makes you think that you are not welcome into God's family, whatever makes you think, oh, I can't be a Christian, whatever distances you from God, Christ has defeated it on the cross. So there's this, means you can fill in the blank to this sentence. This sentence, Jesus died, so what would you put in there? What is it you would put in that gap that you think separates you from God but doesn't? It might be, Jesus died, so my childhood doesn't separate me from God anymore. It might be, Jesus died, so my family history or my painful past doesn't separate me from God anymore. Jesus died, so my broken marriages, my broken family relationships don't separate me from God anymore. Christ has dealt with it. Romans 8, for I am convinced, that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor demons, nor the present, nor the future, nor any powers, neither height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. That is what Jacob encounters. Jacob knows it's amazing, and so he responds with awe and with commitment. We see it in verse 20 to 22, he's not like, oh, I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine. He's like, no, God, you've done this. Oh, I'm going to give you my life. going to give you everything I have got. You see it in verse 22. Of all you give me, I'll give you a tenth. He's offering just a little bit of what God has given him. I could easily start talking about giving this morning, but I want to point you to the amazing truth. The grabber becomes the giver. That's what happens. When we encounter the grace of God, what happens is that the grabber becomes the giver. Yeah, it's by God's grace. Is that how you view your giving on a Sunday morning? He knows that he's not paying God back. He knows that he's not paying the debt. That's already paid. He's just saying, God, thank you so much. And so he's just a tenth. That's what he's doing. Is that how you view your giving? Thank God that that's what we do. He's not fixed at this moment, Jacob, and he's not perfect at all. But he is crucially reconciled to God. So we're going to skip down to chapter, we're going to skip 29 and 31, and we're going to head to chapter 33. We're going to look at those chapters after Easter, by the way, the characters Rachel and Leah. So we're going to get to there. 20 years has gone by at this point. So he's run away, 20 years of not seeing his brother, 20 years of no reconciliation, 20 years of thinking he's gonna be killed, and this is what happens. We see the beautiful picture of reconciliation in this story, and as the relationship with Esau is restored, Jacob's own relationship with God is also strengthened. Esau hasn't been perfect here; like he's been representing God because he's been sinned against, but he's not perfect. And so in chapter 32, Esau is coming with 400 men. Jacob's heart's like, he's going to kill me. He's coming to kill me. He's got 400 men. And so he's like, I'll give him some sheep and stuff, and hopefully he won't. So let's see what happens. Let's see if that's the thing that restores the relationship. We're in chapter 33, verse 1. Jacob looked up, and there was Esau, coming with 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two female servants. He put the female servants and their children in front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother. But Esau, what does he do? He ran to meet Jacob. He embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and he kissed him, and they wept. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. "Who are these with you?" he asked. Jacob answered, "They are the children God has graciously given your servant." Then the female servants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, "What's the meaning of these flocks and herds I met?" "To find favor in your eyes, my lord," he said. But Esau said, "I already have plenty, my brother. Keep them for yourself." "No, please," said Jacob. "If I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Now that you have received me favorably, please accept the present that was brought to you, for God has been gracious to me, and I have to you." It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's compassionate. God's grace comes when we don't deserve it. It comes when we don't deserve it. It's not that he sent a load of flock ahead to get Esau to love him. This is a deep, beautiful, compassionate moment. And you can't help but read this and see the prodigal son in it. So in Luke 15, Jesus uses this story. This is the basis of his story in the prodigal son that Jesus talks about it. Let me show you how clearly they relate to one another. In verse 3, Jacob is groveling. He's still groveling. He's like, I'm so sorry. I've realized now, 20 years, oh, it's an idiot. I'm so sorry. He's prepared his speech just like the son, the prodigal son, does to the father. And then in verse 4 is basically the same line. Look at these. Genesis 33:4, Esau ran to meet his brother, embraced him, threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And then you get Luke, where Jesus is talking about the prodigal son. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The prodigal son, like Jacob, he'd taken the birthright. He'd taken that. He'd rejected his father, but the father is desperate for reconciliation. He's desperate to bring them back together, and he's so unconcerned. He's so concerned. There's nothing stopping him. There's nothing stopping the father. There's nothing stopping us from being reconciled to God. That's how God the Father longs to connect with us. So this reconciliation, it points to our reconciliation with God the Father, but it also is important to see the reconciliation horizontally. That his restored relationship with God that happened in chapter 28 has always had a cloud over it. And it's in this moment in chapter 33 that we see how it is resolved. Separation from others taints our reconciliation with God. We can flourish so much more when we reconcile with those horizontally. Our relationship vertically is flourishing when we sort what is beside us. Taints our enjoyment of our reconciliation. Clearly, it's been a big deal. Big deal to Jacob. He was scared to meet his brother. And this morning, many of you might know firsthand about what it feels like, what Jacob's gone through, the pain that's there, the prayers that it takes up, the headspace it takes up. The reconciliation for Jacob brings him closer to God. It brings him closer in his relationship to God and his brother. Before that reconciliation moment we just read, Jacob has an encounter with God again. He encounters God, and God changes his name. He wrestles with God, and all these moments, the name change and everything, they illustrate how separation from others taints our reconciliation to God. His name is changed to wrestles with God. It's not cuddles with God, it's struggles with God. But look at the impact. Look at the impact of the reconciliation. So when he's wrestling with God after he's done that, he says, when he was wrestling with God, chapter 32, verse 30, so Jacob called that place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face and my life was spared. And then this is what he says to his brother. This is the strength of reconciliation here. He compares it to his encounter with God only a chapter earlier. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God, now that you have received me favorably. They show how much reconciliation with Esau, his brother, points to the importance of reconciliation with God, and how for Jacob, his reconciliation with his brother, that relationship restored with his brother, was so profound, it was like an encounter with God. That's the level that he is working out. The gospel here shows us what relationship can be like. Yeah, Uncle Bryn and Jason, theirs was trivial. It was tiny, and it was comical. But in the same way, that separation between two affects a family. Separation affects the separation horizontally affects our vertical separation too. It is deep. It is real. It's not always possible. I'm aware that for some, reconciliation is not always possible. It's not always appropriate. It's also not in our hands sometimes. But when reconciliation is in our hands, we need to seek to do it. Forgiveness is certainly not always easy, but it is always possible. If we can't reconcile, we can certainly forgive. Because God's grace and his forgiveness to us because of Jesus has dealt with it. Because we have been forgiven much, we can forgive much. bitterness and resentment like we see with Jacob, they do us zilch. They do us no good. Forgiveness and reconciliation, if possible, it can be like meeting with God. It can be like meeting God face to face. It can be that freeing, that flourishing. That's what it can do. Because of God's grace, there is nothing stopping us from being reconciled to him and to others. So the band are going to come up now. We're going to worship God. We're going to take communion together. There is nothing stopping us or making us hold on to unforgiveness or bitterness towards others that can taint our relationship with God. So let's stand. And as we take communion, we're going to do it together. We're going to do it as a family. This is for believers. This is for people who say, "Yep, Jesus, you are my God. I'm going to serve you. I love you. I believe that you died and rose again for my sake, and you have saved me." That's who it's for. So if that's you, join in this morning. And this is a chance to remember that we have been forgiven much.